All right, good morning, Chem 30A class. This is Thursday morning, November 19th, 8 a.m. We're doing acids and bases worksheet this morning. This is actually a pretty lengthy worksheet, and it's got a lot of different concepts in it. So, and some of these concepts are mathematical concepts as we get towards the end of the worksheet. So we're going to kind of take it piece by piece. We're going to go exercise by exercise, and I'm going to show you what you need to do in order to complete this exercise. And we'll go over the math in a little bit more detail. Some of these beginning parts we'll go over a little bit quicker, and then we'll hit the math in a little more detail. All right, so in the acids, base, and bases worksheet, part A, the first thing that we're looking at is we're looking at the dissolving of ionic materials to form electrolytes. So, dissolving of ionic compounds in water to form electrolytic solutions. And what they tell us in this worksheet is that when we do these dissolvings, that we use particular types of arrows. So if the ionic compound dissolves completely, we use a single arrow. If the compound dissolves only partially, we use an equilibrium arrow. So this is a forward, meaning that the thing goes entirely to the right-hand side. This one is equilibrium. And what it means is that we have both undissolved material and dissolved material at the same time. So this is the ionic compound dissolves some. So it doesn't dissolve completely. So we have two different types of arrows that we use for the two different situations. Now, when do we choose those different types of situations? The way that I would decide which situation I'm in is by the type of ionic compound. So if the ionic compound has a group 1A cation, so those were sodium or potassium or lithium, then I would use that straightforward arrow. If the anion is an acetate, that is C2H3O2-, or nitrate, that's the NO3-, then those are things that dissolve 100% that are always soluble. So those are our always soluble cations and anions. I would choose to use the forward arrow. Anything else? Then above, I would use the equilibrium arrow in terms of deciding. So just to show you some examples of how we might write some of these things, let's say that we had sodium phosphate. And the way that I would do this is I would take and write it as a solid. I would write water over the arrow. Water is not really a reactant in this. It is dissolving the ionic compound. And we are producing three of the sodium cations. And we write a little aqueous next to it. And we get one of the phosphates. It has a 3- charge, and we write a little aqueous next to it. And we chose to use that one-way arrow because of the sodium that was in that. All right, if we have something else, something that may be like magnesium bromide, in this case, I don't have a sodium, a potassium, or a lithium. I don't have an acetate or a nitrate. I've got magnesium bromide. So in this case, I will choose to use a double-ended arrow, the equilibrium type of arrow. This has a little solid next to it. I still write water over the arrow, indicating that I'm making an aqueous solution. And in this case, we make magnesium, which is a 2+ cation dissolved in water, and we get two of the bromides. And we're getting charge and state in there. So that's how we're deciding which of these two arrows that we're doing. And really the meaning of these, when we think about these two arrows, what the meaning of the arrows are, is that the one-way arrow really means that everything, almost all of the mass, is on the product side. And very little is left on the reactant side. In the equilibrium arrow, it's generally considered that more of the mass is on the reactant side, but that we get some that's on the product over here. So those are sort of the meanings or the interpretations of what we think of when we think of these two different arrow types. Okay, so that's the example for that. And they have you write out 5 different equations. Then in part B, they're wanting you to decide whether a solution contains ions, molecules, or both. Ions, molecules, or both. Okay, in these, they give you a material, and I'm gonna pick not a couple of these to do, but I'll do something that are close. Let's say that we have magnesium hydroxide. And what they tell you this is, they tell you that this is a strong electrolyte. Actually, let's do it this way. Let me define their terms and what they're using. A non-electrolyte. In a non-electrolyte, there we go. In a non-electrolyte, this is a material that is dissolving as a molecule. This is a material that stays molecular when it dissolves. And there are a couple of materials that are like this. Let's do ethanol. In this case, what we have is CH3, CH2OH. And when we show how this dissolves, the way that we would do it is that we would show the CH3, CH2OH. This happens to be a liquid, so we'll put a small L next to it. We'll use a one-way arrow, and this will have water above the arrow, same as we were doing before. But as it dissolves, it will not dissociate. It will stay molecular, CH2OH, and then we put a little AQ next to it. And so when they're asking us, will this contain ions, molecules, or both? And they want you to circle whichever answer is the correct answer. In this case, it would just be molecules. In a strong electrolyte, And a strong electrolyte, this is a material that dissolves by dissociating, and it dissociates completely. So in dissociating completely, a material that is like this might be something like the sodium hydrogen phosphate. And so something that dissociates completely like this they would take and give me the name of it, which is going to take more space than I've got. Sodium hydrogen phosphate. And they would tell me then this is a strong electrolyte. So my job then would be to take that sodium hydrogen phosphate as a solid, to add water to it, and then to write it completely dissociated, two sodium ions, aqueous, plus a hydrogen phosphate, which is a 2- charge. And notice that I'm using that one-way arrow again because it dissociates completely. So that's the strong electrolyte. And then we have what is a weak electrolyte. A weak electrolyte is something that dissociates only a small amount. Let's use the term slightly. So an example of a weak electrolyte, I'm trying to think of an example that's not on the screen here, and we have so few of these weak electrolytes in the way that these dissociate. Let's do methylamine. This is CH3NH2. And what they would tell us is this is a weak electrolyte. In this case, I would take the material. This one happens to be a liquid. I would use the double-ended arrows, the equilibrium arrows. I would add water up above it. And for this molecule, the way it dissolves is CH3NH3. It gets a positive charge. It's taking a hydrogen ion from the water molecule, and it is making OH minus. And because this has an equilibrium where we have a lot of reactants, and some smaller amounts of products, we have both ions. So here they're asking us, is it ions, molecules, or both? And in this case, we would want to circle both because we happen to have both molecules in our reactants and we have ions. Oh, and these were supposed to get little AQs, meaning that they are now aqueous. And we didn't do I'm just realizing that on the strong electrolyte, I didn't answer the question. Ions, molecules, or both? And in this one, we would have answered that it has ions because it dissociates completely. So it's not about which arrow you're using. Notice that we have a straight arrow, we have molecules. Notice that we have a one-way arrow, we have ions. Notice that we have a double-ended arrow, we have both. So the type of arrow is not indicative of whether you have ions, molecules, or both. What is indicative is whether it is a non-electrolyte, in which case you get molecules. So let's color coordinate these. Non-electrolyte, it's going to be molecules. When we have a strong electrolyte, we're going to get ions. And when we have a weak electrolyte, we're going to get both. Okay, and they also correspond to the arrow type. So we can go back and coordinate that. But the arrow type, notice that the arrow type does not coordinate with whether you have ions, molecules, or both. It is the type, whether it's a non-electrolyte, a strong electrolyte, or a weak electrolyte. Okay? I hope I've made that clear enough for you guys and how we do those equations. All right, next up, we have indicate whether the following characteristics describe an acid or a base. This one's a little bit easier for us. So these are part C or exercise C. These are characteristics of acids and bases. And so they want to know, what color does it turn? Litmus paper, does it taste sour? Does it taste bitter? Neutralizes acids, neutralizes bases, contains hydroxide, contains hydronium. Basically what we want to do here is let's write down some of the characteristics of acids. So under acids, acids taste sour. That was one of the things that we described as the Arrhenius definition, the old definition. They produce hydrogen ions in water. Let's also put that in parentheses that that this hydrogen ion is interchangeable with H3O plus hydronium. So those are interchangeable terms, hydrogen ion or hydronium ion. Acids will neutralize bases. In terms of a neutralization reaction, and they turn blue litmus paper red. I think that's everything that we need to hit with that. And so in that they produce hydrogen ions, they contain more H plus than hydroxide. So that's another way that we can distinguish them. Okay, let's do a set for bases. Bases taste bitter. They produce hydroxide ion when placed into water. Bases will neutralize acids. They turn blue litmus paper, red litmus paper blue. And they contain more hydroxide than hydronium. And I keep putting H3O plus here in parentheses because they are interchangeable. So given that they produce hydroxide, they contain more hydroxide than hydronium. That should allow you to be able to complete exercise C. Exercise D is a nomenclature component. That you should be able to fill out without much assistance. So part D, this is nomenclature. It's just alternating name or formula. That part you've been doing for a while. So I think you can handle looking up that part or catching up that part. Strengths of acids and bases. In this case, they're asking us, when do we use double arrows? And when do we use single arrows? And how do we write the ionization for the following acids in water? Okay, so this is part E. Part E is writing the ionization equations for acids and bases. In this part, it's really about the strength of the acid or the base. So if it is a strong acid or strong base, these correlate with strong electrolyte. And in correlating with a strong electrolyte, when we had a strong electrolyte, this implies that they dissociate completely. And therefore, we use the one-way arrow. A weak acid or a weak base correlate with a weak electrolyte. And in such, they dissociate only a small amount. Dissociate some or little. And as such, we use the equilibrium arrows. And the interpretation there, when we look at it that way, is that when something dissociates completely, as we've said before, that if we think about this as a balance, that almost all of the mass is on the product side. And only a very tiny amount remains on the reactant side. But in an equilibrium situation, the equilibrium situation differs in the reverse. It is that the reactant side is the main side, and that the product side is only a small amount. So that's why we use the different arrows, or how we use the different arrows. And so when they give us a strong acid or a weak acid, or a strong base and a weak base, and this is, I should say, this is part E and F, because E is the acids and F is the bases. So it covers both of these. And we can show a couple of examples here. Let's show a strong acid in the way that they would want us to do. So let me choose H2SO4. And they would say strong acid. In this one, I've chosen something that is diprotic. I've chosen something that has two hydrogens on it. And as this dissociates entirely, we are going to take this H2SO4 and we are going to react it with water. So we actually add water to it. And given that there are two hydrogens, we will need two water molecules. So I'm taking and I'm capturing this two, and I'm using two waters. We use a one-way arrow, and then we write H3O plus, there are two of these, plus we get the sulfate, SO4 2 minus, and it has ionized completely. So this is aqueous and aqueous. Notice that we're not putting the water over the arrow. In this case, the water is a reactant in and of itself. It is accepting a hydrogen ion from the acid to produce hydronium. So that's the way that I would do that. For a weak acid, an example of a weak acid would be acetic acid, H3O2. A weak acid. In this case, we write the acid HC2H3O2, acetic acid, plus water. Notice that I'm using only one water now because there is only one hydrogen. So I will use only one water molecule. This is weak, so I'm using the double arrow, the equilibrium arrow. It produces only one hydronium. And I write aqueous next to that. And it produces C2H3O2 minus. And that one is also aqueous. And let's see, what else do I want to do here? Let's catch the water as a liquid. And we'll do it that way. Okay, so those are some acid examples, strong acid and weak acid. Let's catch the strong base and weak base. So a strong base is generally something such as a metal hydroxide, potassium hydroxide. This will be a strong base. In the strong base, we write potassium hydroxide as a solid plus, well, actually in this one, I'm not going to write plus, and I'm going to show you why. We're going to write the water over the arrow. And this one dissociates into potassium ions, aqueous, and hydroxide ions, aqueous. Why is water not a reactant? It is not a reactant because if I try to write it as a reactant and I write KOH plus water goes to form, I would get potassium, I would get hydroxide, and I would get water. Notice that it dissociated into potassium and hydroxide, and the water is showing up on both sides. And because the water is showing up on both sides, it really doesn't belong in the dissolving equation. It's really much better to write it over the arrow. So this up here, this is the preferred way. And we generally just strike the water out because it's written on both sides. So when we have acids, the acids actually react with the water to produce something different, to produce hydronium. But bases, strong bases, just dissociate. And so this is really catching here the idea of the strong base and that they dissociate completely and that the water is written over the arrow. Weak bases are a little different. Let's choose a weak base. And I'll just tell you what the weak base is. I'm trying to pick one that is not All right, let's do it this way. NH3, this is ammonia and is a weak base. In this case, with the weak base, there are two different types of weak bases. This is why I was hemming and hawing over how I wanted to do this and which I wanted to show you. I'm going to show you both. In this case, the weak base, this base actually does react with water. Ammonia is a can be a liquid, can be a gas, depending on its temperature. We'll react it with water. We use the equilibrium arrows. Water is a liquid. We produce NH3+. This is now aqueous. And we produce hydroxide ion, aqueous. And in that this is a base, it produced hydroxide ion. So when the ammonia reacted with it, we got hydroxide as a result. And so the water needed to be a reactant in this case in order to produce the hydroxide. The other type of weak base, which I don't think is in this experiment, but is important for you to understand, NaC2H3O2, sodium acetate, is also a weak base. However, I'm going to say that the sodium ion is a spectator. And so I'm going to leave it out of my equation when I write my equation. So I'm going to write my equation as C2H3O2-. This is going to be aqueous. It's going to react with water, much in the same way that the ammonia did. We'll use the equilibrium arrows. We're going to produce acetic acid, HC2H3O2, and we will get hydroxide. As a product. And so in looking at the weak base is noted by the equilibrium arrow, meaning that most of the material remains unreacted. Some of the weak bases are molecular and take a proton from water to produce a cation and the resulting hydroxide. Some of the weak bases are salts where the cation is a spectator. In those cases, it is easier to write just the anion to show that the anion reacts with water to produce hydroxide ion. So the two different types there for the bases, the strong base and the weak base, okay? All right, neutralization reactions. That is part G, exercise G, writing neutralization reactions. In writing neutralization reactions, a neutralization reaction is the reaction of a strong acid and a strong base to produce a salt and water. So this is the reaction of a strong acid and strong base to produce a salt, and by salt, we mean an ionic compound. And water. The equation usually looks like this. HNA plus N, let's do it this way. Sodium hydroxide, this is what you're normally going to see, produces, in this case, Na, lowercase n, A minus, plus N waters. So this N that shows up, we see that show up in multiple different places depending upon the type of acid that we're working with. Although what I will say is that we also may not get sodium hydroxide. There may be other types of hydroxides that we see. Let's do a little thing here. HCl, H2SO4, H3PO4. These are acids. And the type, how do we refer to these? This one is called monoprotic. Protic refers to how many H's, how many acidic hydrogens. This is mono meaning one. So I have mono, one hydrogen. This one is diprotic. Diprotic meaning two. So I have two acidic hydrogens. And this one you could probably guess is triprotic or three hydrogens. So I have monoprotic, diprotic, and triprotic types of acids. And there can be higher. We could have tetraprotic for certain types of acids. For bases, we do the same sort of classification. We can have bases that are things like NaOH. We could have magnesium hydroxide, or we could have aluminum hydroxide. And the type. Monobasic, dibasic, or tribasic, referring to the number of hydroxides in the formula. So we're looking at how many we've got in the formula. Okay. when we go through and write the neutralization reactions, let's show an example of the neutralization reactions and how we would write this. Let's say that we have sodium hydroxide plus, we're usually writing the acids first. Doesn't matter. You can write either one first, but in this example, they're almost always writing the acids first. So let's pick HNO3 plus sodium hydroxide. Both of these start off as aqueous. They follow the double displacement pattern. The hydrogen goes with the hydroxide. The sodium goes with the nitrate. And I produce NaNO3 plus water. Now these were each monoprotic, monobasic. I produce one water. Mono, one. So there is one hydrogen, one hydroxide, which forms one water. And I get sodium nitrate in addition to that. So that's my salt and my water. If the equation has two protic hydrogens in it, like sulfuric acid, and I have sodium hydroxide, it follows the double displacement pattern again, but now we're going to see that this two that's here is going to propagate through the equation. I'm going to get Na2SO4 and two H2Os. And so what's happening here is because I have two acidic protons, I will require two sodium hydroxides to balance the equation. I'll get two in the sodium and two in the water, and the equation is balanced. If I had a triprotic, H3PO4, you can guess how many sodium hydroxides it's going to require. It's going to require three sodium hydroxides. I will produce Na3PO4, plus I will get three water molecules. I'm forgetting some of my other symbols here. Water should all be liquid. The ionic materials should all be aqueous. And we have propagated through the three, 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 and three. Now these equations are being balanced just like the double displacement equations. So if you hit an example that is not like one of these, for instance, if I take and I react HCl plus magnesium hydroxide, then what I'm doing is I'm taking the magnesium, which is a 2+ cation, and the chloride, which is a 1- anion, and I am balancing them for charge, just like we have always done to get 2- and 2+, such that my formula is MgCl subscript 2. The water is forming from the hydrogen ion and the hydroxide ion, and they are always going together in a 1-to-1 ratio to produce water. To balance the equation, I need only look at how many hydroxides and hydrogens I have. If I have two hydroxides, that's going to require two HCls, and it's going to make two waters. Notice again that the two, and how these balance out. I could have balanced this the alternative way, the way that I've been taught to balance things. I could have taken it and written out the formula HCl plus plus MgOH2. I'm just trying to show you a faster way to balance them than writing it all out, but we certainly could do it this way. MgCl2 plus H2O. And because I need to fit some coefficients in here, I'm going to spread it out a little bit. That should give me enough room. And I've got hydrogen, chloride, magnesium, and oxygen. And so on the right-hand side, I have three hydrogens as it's written. I'm counting one plus two, so that's three. Chlorides, there are one. Magnesiums, there are one. And oxygen, I have two. And on the right-hand side, we'll make the same list, HCl, Mg, O. I've got two hydrogens, two chlorides, one magnesium, and one oxygen. And we can start balancing in just about any location. Oh, maybe not. Hydrogen appears in too many places. I would leave hydrogen alone. I would take and start balancing at the chloride. I need to get two chlorides on this side, so I use a two coefficient. That's the first thing I'm changing. That changes my chloride, but it also changes my hydrogen count. Magnesium is balanced, so I won't mess with that. Oxygen is out of balance. Let's balance that. I need a two on this side. That gives me two oxygens. It also changes my hydrogen count to four. And now everything balances. And so we could have used that old balancing pattern as well. That will get you through exercise G. And now we come to the mathematical component. This is the component where we are calculating pHs and looking at pH. And so in this part, I'm going to scroll down. I'm going to start a whole new page. So in this part, what we do is we talk about what pH is and how we calculate hydrogen ion concentrations and hydroxide ion concentrations. And we start, so this part, I'm going to not do the entire exercise as much as it is show you how to go through and do some of these calculations and where they come from. I'm just looking to see what it is I want to hit here. So this is parts H, I, J, K, L, M, N. And these all have to do with hydroxide ion concentration, hydrogen ion concentration, pH, and I believe maybe even pOH. So first off, these symbols. These mean concentration. Usually in moles per liter. So that's molarity. That's what we use those square brackets to mean. Second thing is, water is an interesting material. If we take two water molecules, the two water molecules react in a way to produce hydronium and hydroxide. This seems like sort of a weird thing to do. Why would two water molecules do this? Well, to describe why two water molecules do this, and this is called the auto-ionization of water. Why two water molecules will choose to do this, to react in this way, one to produce hydronium and one to produce hydroxide, is because if we take a look at water reacting with NH3, we find that it produces ammonium, NH4 plus, and hydroxide, OH minus. In which case, if we look at how the water acted as an acid. The water gave up a proton, donated a proton. So this is water acting as an acid. If we look at reacting with HCl, when water reacts with HCl, we find that the water picks up the proton and becomes H3O plus, and we get chloride minus. And so this is water receiving a proton, water acting as a base. So that means that water, H2O, is both an acid and a base. It means that water can be either an acid or a base depending upon what it's reacting with. And because water can act both as an acid or as a base, it can react as an acid and a base on its own, by itself, with another water molecule. And so what we see when we look at this auto ionization of water, what we're really seeing is we're seeing two water molecules that are choosing to react, probably initially through something like a hydrogen bond. Where the water molecule that was bonding through a hydrogen bond decides to actually take the hydrogen ion. And as it takes the hydrogen ion away, what's left is hydroxide. And the other one becomes hydronium. Now, this doesn't happen to a great extent. It happens only a little bit. And in fact, it happens so small that when we write the equilibrium for this reaction, and we can write the equilibrium for this reaction, we find that it dissociates only a tiny, tiny bit, 1 times 10 to the minus 14 in terms of its equilibrium constant. So let me remind you about equilibrium constants. When we write an equilibrium constant, if we have A plus B goes to make C plus D, the equilibrium constant, K, equals the concentration of C times the concentration of D all over the concentration of A times the concentration of B. It is the product of the product of the products divided by the product of the reactants. And there's one little more part here. We usually use the coefficients as lowercase symbols, and C gets raised to the power of C, D to the power of D, A to the A, and B to the lowercase b. And this is what we call the equilibrium constant for a reaction. And for water, when we look at the auto ionization of water, H2O, two of them, goes to form hydroxide ion plus hydronium ion. That equilibrium constant, K, is written this way. K is equal to the concentration in moles per liter of hydroxide times the concentration of hydronium in moles per liter, divided by the concentration of water, this time squared, because of the two that's in front of it. Okay, and we find that fairly inconvenient to use, because trying to calculate the molarity of water when water is the solvent seems a little strange. And so what they do is they factor out this piece here and they say, all right, well, let's take K and multiply it times the concentration of water squared. And we will call that a new constant, something unique, KW, where W stands for water. So KW is equals the ionization constant for water. So the W there is telling me about water, and it equals 1 × 10⁻¹⁴, a very small number. And unit wise, we oftentimes just write it without units, but technically because it is, oh, and I missed it. Hang on a second. I should have put what it is. It is the hydroxide ion concentration in moles per liter times the hydronium ion concentration in moles per liter. And because I am multiplying moles per liter times moles per liter, the units on this are moles squared over liters squared, or moles per liter squared. And it equals 1 × 10⁻¹⁴, which is a really, really tiny number, which means that when you think about a fraction, this is the way that I think about it, is that K values, equilibrium constants, because the K value is equal to the sum or the product of the reactants over the products, when the K value is much smaller than one, what it means is that that fraction, the products are much greater than the reactants. So if we think about the reactants, excuse me, and I made a mistake. It is always products over reactants. So what that means is that my reactants reactants are small and products are large. So we have, I keep doing this. I apologize again. I got mixed up as I was writing them down and then I did it over on the right-hand side again. So I want products on top. So that means that my reactants, there we go, are what are large, and my products or what are small. I'm trying to get the small number in the numerator and the large number in the denominator because the fraction is much less than one. And 1 × 10⁻¹⁴, that is a one that is preceded by 13 zeros. So we're saying that 1 × 10⁻¹⁴ is a very small number. It is much, much less than one. It is 0.12345678910111213, and there's the one, moles squared over liters squared. That's what that number is. So water does this and produces hydrogen ions and hydroxide ions, but it does it to a very, very small amount. Okay, so once we have that, then what we can do is we can calculate hydroxide ion concentrations and hydronium ion concentrations given one or the other. So let's do an example of problem solving like this. What is the hydronium ion concentration when hydroxide is 1.25 times 10 to the minus sixth. And I'll include the units moles per liter. Okay, how do we solve this? Well, we have an expression that says that Kw is equal to hydroxide times hydronium. And that's equal to 1 times 10 to the minus 14th. Now, we could put the units on it, but the units tend to not be super critical here in the way that we deal with it. What we have is we have two variables and a constant. Kw is that value. So we basically just get rid of the Kw part, and we just deal with just this part right here. And we have been given one of those variables. We've been given the hydroxide, and we are going to solve for the hydronium. So I would go through and solve for the hydronium first and then put in the numbers. So watch this. What we'll do is we'll say solve equation for H3O plus. In doing so, we will get that H3O plus, the concentration of hydronium, is equal to 1 times 10 to the minus 14th divided by the hydroxide ion concentration. Now, all we need to do is go and put in our numbers. This is 1 times 10 to the minus 14th divided by, we put in 1.25 times 10 to the minus 6th. And now we just pull out our calculator and figure out what that is. To enter it, the way that I'm going to enter it is I'm going to do 1 EE. That's the key that I use. That means times 10 to the exponent. I will use the key that reverses my sign. I will type in 14. I'll do the division key, 1.25. I'll use that EE key again. I will use the key that reverses my symbol, the negative sign, and then I'll put in a 6, and then I'll hit enter. Now, you may have an E key, or you may have a 10 to the X key. So those are alternative keys. Your negative sign may look like this. It may be a plus minus that is in parentheses. And so those may be different keystrokes that you use on your calculator, depending on what your calculator has. So I will do 1 EE minus 14 divided by 1.25 EE minus 6 equals, and I get 8. The E on my calculator means times 10 to minus 9, and that would be in moles per liter as a concentration. Now, sig figs. How do we do sig figs? This 1 times 10 to the minus 14th is generally considered to be a 1.00. We usually follow the sig figs on whatever value it is that we're given for the hydroxide. So these are generally going to follow like a 3 sig fig value here, times 10 to the minus 14 for sig fig purposes. So when I'm looking at it and I'm saying sig figs, yes, this would normally be 1 the way I've written it, but maybe for consistency, I should extend this out so that we can see it, such that this is 3 sig figs and 3 sig figs. And so my answer should have 3 sig figs. So it's going to be 8.00 times 10 to the minus 9th moles per liter. And that's what we would box in. Okay. So it's just simply dividing 1 times 10 to the minus 14th by whatever you're given in order to get the opposite, in order to get the hydronium or the hydroxide. Let's see. So you have a series of those to go through and do. Those are H, and a series of those to go through and do for I. And those are pretty straightforward. Then we have the pH scale. So let's talk about what pH is. Lowercase p, uppercase H. It stands for, or stood for originally, the power of hydrogen. And it is a logarithmic scale that measures hydrogen ion concentration. P is a function. And as a function, it's a mathematical function that stands for minus the log. And so this literally means pH, literally means minus the log of the hydrogen ion concentration, or minus the log of the hydronium ion concentration, because hydrogen ion and hydronium ion are interchangeable. And so you can think of it as either one. They are interchangeable quantities. And so given a hydrogen ion concentration, we can calculate its pH. And on the pH scale, when we look at the pH scale, the pH scale typically runs between, let's do it this way. Let's do zero on the left-hand side, and up to 14 on the right-hand side. And I've used arrows, meaning that there are negative pHs, and there are pHs above 14. But typically we run from 0 to 14. A pH of 7 is what is called a neutral pH. A pH which is greater than 7 has more hydroxide ion and is considered to be basic. A pH that has more hydrogen ion or hydronium ion is considered to be acidic. And so what we're doing is we're taking these concentrations, which are really tiny numbers. We're taking things that are like 8.0 times 10 to the minus ninth and relating them to a scale that runs between 0 and 14, and that's what the logarithm does. So a logarithm says, what power do I need to raise 10 to in order to equal the value of what I am taking the log of? So in other words, the log scale, log function. When I take log of some number, 10, that means what power do I need to raise 10 to in order to equal 10? This is the interpretation of what the logarithm function actually means. And we're trying to find the value of X. So when we say log 10 equals X, we're trying to say, well, what power do I need to raise 10 to in order to get X? That's the interpretation of the log. And here, in order to get 10, to get 10 back, I would have to raise 10 to the first power. 10 to the 1 equals 10. So log of 10 equals 1. If I want to do log of 100, that means 10 to the x equals 100, what power do I need to have X be equal to? X is equal to 2. 10 times 10 is 100. And so what it does is it takes large numbers and relates them on a scale that is between 1 and 10, or 1 and 14 in the way that we're doing these logarithmic scales here. So it takes very large numbers and it takes very small numbers, and it converts them into simple numbers here. Now, how do we deal with that negative? What does the negative sign mean? Well, if I take the log of 10 to the minus sixth, I'm saying, what power do I need to raise 10 to equal 10 to the minus sixth? Well, that would be a minus six. However, what I do is we take and we throw the negative in front of the log, 10 to the minus sixth. And that means, what power do I need to raise 10 to in order to get 10 to the minus six, but then take it and turn it negative? And so this would be a negative negative six, which equals six. And so it takes very small numbers and it converts them into small positive numbers. And that's where we get the pH scale. So if I then take and say pH 10 to the negative six, this equals six, because it says minus the log. That's what pH means, minus the log of 10 to the minus sixth. And actually, maybe I don't need the pH in there. It's just the P function, P 10 to the negative six, because we said P means take the negative log of that number. So that's where that function comes from. And actually, I don't want to throw this onto this page, so I'm going to scoot this up and scoot this guy up here. Okay, so how do we go through and do pH for a number of different numbers? Let's take an example. Example, find the pH of a solution with hydronium ion concentration equal to 8.00 times 10 to the minus 3 moles per liter. So what I do is pH equals minus the log of the hydrogen or hydronium ion concentration. So that means that I'm just going to take minus the log of 8.00 times 10 to the minus 3. And in order to do that, I was doing it very simplistic before. This says, what power do I need to raise 10 to in order to equal 8.0 times 10 to the minus 3? So mathematically, when I enter this into the calculator, on my calculator, I put the negative in first, and then I do the log function. My log function is on a separate page. There it is, log. And then I put in the value 8.00 EE minus 3, close parens. So on my calculator, I'm entering in the negative first. And remember, on your calculator, it may be a plus minus symbol. I am then entering in my log symbol, parentheses, 8.00, then I use the E, or you may have an EE key, or you may have a 10 to the X key. And then I put in that plus minus symbol again, and then my 3 value, and then I close the parens, and I hit equals. That gives me a value, which is 2.0969, this big old number. So this equals 2.0969. 9 1 0 0 1 3 0 1. And pHs are unitless values. And now we need to talk about sig figs. So how do we do the sig figs? This part, not that part, this part. This part is called the mantissa. The mantissa tells me about the power that is here. That piece tells me the power that I'm raising 10 to. And the last piece, the decimal component here, is what carries the sig figs. So the sig figs are carried in the decimal part. And so if I have 3 sig figs, and that is 3 there, then I am going to then take 3 of the decimals in order to communicate my sig figs. And this is going to equal 2.097. And it is a unitless value. There are no units associated with pH. And this is a 3 sig fig pH. Because the sig figs are only carried in the decimal component. All right, let's try one more. 5 the pH of a solution with a hydrogen ion concentration of 1.02 times 10 to the minus 2 moles per liter. pH equals minus the log of the hydrogen ion concentration. This equals minus the log of 1.02 times 10 to the minus 2 moles per liter. And so we're going to enter that into the calculator, minus the log of 1.02 times 10 EE minus 2, close parens, equals 1.991399828.24. Where do I do the sig figs? How do I track that? There are 3 sig figs in my original value. So I will take 3 of my decimals, and that equals a pH of 1.991. And that's where I end it. Okay. Going backwards, how do I figure out the hydrogen ion concentration? If I want to go backwards, and how do I find the hydronium ion concentration from a pH? Well, the way that we do that is that we can take hydrogen ion concentration is equal to 10 to the minus pH. You simply take the pH value and raise 10 to the negative value of that. So an example, what is the hydrogen ion concentration of a solution with a pH of 6.92. Well, what we just said was that hydronium equals 10 to the minus pH. So hydronium is going to equal 10 to the minus pH. That's going to equal 10 to the minus 6.92. And then we should calculate that out mathematically. We should enter that into the calculator. And the way that I enter this into the calculator is I enter 10 And then I use a key that is called the caret key that has that symbol to it. Minus, this is your plus minus, 6.92. And then we hit the equals key. So on my calculator, the caret key also sometimes equals the n to the x to the n key. So these are alternative keys. On my calculator, it's x to the n. So I'm going to enter 10, x to the n. I'll enter in the minus 6.92 and hit the equal sign. So this is going to equal 1.202264434, and then don't miss this part, times 10 to the minus 7. See on my calculator right there, it has e minus 7, and I'm catching that times 10 to the minus 7. If you forget that part, the answer is really, really wrong. Okay, now sig figs. How do we do sig figs? Well, we go back and we catch the pH and we look at it. This was a pH that had 2 sig figs. So I want my value to have 2 sig figs. Because this is not a pH, this is now just a straight concentration. The first number here is where I start counting, and I count 1, 2, and I'll do my rounding to the tenths position. Do not forget about your exponent. This is going to equal 1.2 times 10 to the minus 7th, and this does have units, moles per liter. And that's how we would work backwards. So really, the hardest part about these is entering it into the calculator. They are not that hard to do, except for entering it into the calculator. You just have to know the right way to enter it. Okay, that gets you through K. That gets you through L. And almost through M. Let's do one more little component here with M. M gives you a table, and they ask you to complete the table. In completing the table, they're giving you hydronium. They're giving you hydroxide, the pH, and whether it's acidic, basic, or neutral. And in, there goes my dogs. In this table, when we look at it, they can give you any one of the values and ask you for the other three values. And so an example in the first one, they give you 1 times 10 to the minus 12 for the hydroxide ion concentration. And they ask you to finish out the table. Well, what we can do is we can use that hydroxide ion concentration to find the hydronium. Find the hydronium, we can find the pH. Look on the pH scale, we can figure out whether it's acidic, basic, or neutral. And that's the way that we set this up. So what we would say is hydronium times hydroxide equals 1 times 10 to the minus 14th. That means that hydronium is going to equal 1 times 10 to the minus 14th divided by hydroxide. That's going to equal 1 times 10 to the minus 14th divided by 1 times 10 to the minus 12th. Do you remember how to do this mathematically without even putting it into the calculator? When I divide a number, let's say a to the b divided by a to the c, this equals a to the b minus c. So I'm going to take minus 14, subtract a minus 12, or minus 14 plus 12, which is minus 2. So without even going into the calculator, I can say that this equals 1 times 10 to the minus 2. And I can do that pretty quickly. So this is 1 times 10 to the minus 2. I could always go in and put that into the calculator too, and that would work. And if I want to find pH, now I take minus the log of this. So the pH is going to equal minus the log of 1 times 10 to the minus 2. If I put that into the calculator, this is going to come out to a pH of 2. Because I'm saying, what power do I need to raise 10 to equal 1 times 10 to the minus 2? Well, that would be minus 2, and then I take the negative of it. Let's clear this out. I'll just show you. Minus, there it is, log 1 EE minus 2, close parens, equals 2. So I have a pH of 2. And is that acidic, basic, or neutral? Well, we can go back up and we can look at our pH scale that we wrote out. And we find that a number, which is 2, would be something that has more hydronium ion and would be on the acidic side of the scale. So this would be acidic. That's how we go through and do these. And we started from that point, and we filled out the rest of the table. Similarly, you can, given the pH, find the hydroxide ion concentration, find the pH, and then figure out whether it's acidic or basic. So basically what you're doing is, no matter what they're giving you, you're working back to the hydronium and then to the hydroxide if you need to. But you're always going to the hydronium to be able to find the pH, and the pH tells you whether or not it's acidic or basic. So the pH tells you about this. The hydroxide ion concentration and the pH are linked. And we're generally going back and forth here between hydronium and hydroxide. So there's the way that I would work both of those to go back and forth in exercise M. Now let's see, is there anything else? Oh, buffers. How much time do I have? Buffers is really quick, because we don't do anything big with a buffer. We just go with a definition. So the buffer just has a simple definition. A buffer is a solution that resists the change in pH. And a buffer is made from a weak acid and its conjugate base. This is a must. Let's see, how do I want to do this? Let's just do it this way. So a buffer must contain a weak acid and its conjugate base. If it doesn't have a weak acid and the conjugate base, it can't be a buffer. That's the only thing that they want you to do here. They want you to look at several different examples that have different materials in them and to tell them whether or not that solution is going to be a buffer. And so buffer examples. A buffer example is is H2PO4 minus and HPO4 2 minus. This is a phosphate buffer. This is the weak acid and its conjugate base. The conjugate base refers to after you lose a proton on the weak acid, what is left over. That is the conjugate base. And so you need to have both the weak acid and its conjugate base. And there are sodium ions that are here, so we should have a single sodium. And over here, we would have two sodiums that would counteract that. And so I've left those sodiums off just to make it a little bit more clear into an example of a buffer. Another weak acid might be sodium acetate and acetic acid, HC2H3O2. This is the weak acid, acetic acid, and its conjugate would be sodium C2H3O2. This is the conjugate base. Let's just separate this and say that this would be the sodium ion to the acetate, and the acetate is the conjugate base of the weak acid. These are examples of buffers where they must contain two components, a weak acid and a conjugate. If you have a strong acid, something like HCl, HNO3, H2SO4, these are all strong acids. You cannot make a buffer from these. And the reason is because these dissociate completely. And what we're relying on is the fact that these guys do not dissociate completely, that there's a lot of them that remain undissociated. And so if you add a little bit of acid, the base reacts with whatever acid you add to make this weak acid back. And if you add some base, it reacts with this base, with this acid to produce some of the conjugate base. And it absorbs both acids and bases because you have this weak acid and its conjugate. But if you put in a strong acid, it ionizes completely and there's no acid left to react with any base that you add to it. It has no absorbing power to produce, to react with the base. If you have a strong base, the same problem. Strong bases dissociate completely and there's no acid in order to react with any additional base in order to buffer the solution. And so strong acids and strong bases cannot make buffers. And so they have a number of different things here asking you if you can make a buffer from it. And all you have to do is look to say, does it have a weak acid? And is the conjugate base present? If it is, it's a buffer solution. If it's not, it's not a buffer. All right, that is everything you need to do. We are out of time. We are done. Oh, the last problem on there, problem 5, is crossed out on exercise N because you don't need to do it. That's a calculation problem. So I should fit it in here. Do not do exercise N, problem 5. We're crossing that one off. That just makes it an easier day. All right, that's it. We're signing off. Take care. And we'll see you guys next week.